Penn Jillette from the legendary magic duo Penn and Teller has written about a street performer. The name of the new book is Felony Juggler. It is about a street performer who finds himself enmeshed in a crime and must outwit his fellow conspirators in his greatest juggling act yet. I love this novel so much, and it's a great treat to welcome Penn Jillette to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Well, thank you for having me.
Given your own experience as a juggler, when did this start to percolate?
Everything up until the crime, which is really first third of the book, and all the stuff, the Renaissance Festival, are all true stories that I've been telling for years since I was a street performer. And as we should say, living rough and hopping trains and street performing and hitchhiking. And I've been telling those stories to friends, and they would tell me over and over that I should write a book, write an autobiography. And that seemed a little creepy, so I put a bank robbery on top of it. But it really is the story of what it was like to be a hitchhiker and a street performer in, 1974, 75, 76.
What was, as you look back on it now, what do you think people would have found creepy about that aspect of life? Is just going from town to town?
No. That's not what I mean. I just mean writing an autobiography seems...
Oh, I see.
Have a little bit of, you want to put something else into it. That's
I get
all I'm saying.
I get it. Yeah.
To actually state my life is interesting enough to be a book seems a little bit much. To state I can steal parts of my life and then make up a book seems like a better thing to me.
Oh, Penn, I wish more people felt like that.
it's really interesting. I've written like five books of essays.
Yes.
And when I do those, I try to be conscientious and stay with the facts as best as I can perceive them, remember them, and understand them. But when you write fiction and you're freed, or at least I'm freed from that constraint, it feels like it's so much more honest. And as soon as I put another name on the character, I can write things that I wouldn't write if the character were named Penn.
Right. Absolutely.
Even though it might be absolutely the truth as I feel it.
Oh, where did you grow up, and where did you, because Poe in the story ends up settling in Philadelphia, but was that similar to you?
I'm from Greenfield, Massachusetts, and I lived about 2 years, 2.5 years on the road, just hitchhiking, sleeping rough, as they say, hopping trains. And then because of Teller, I settled down in Philadelphia and did street performing there as we got together the Penn and Teller show.
When you look at the, I want to get to the book in a second, but the idea just of, what was it about juggling and in doing that, do you think that is fascinating and also fascinates an audience?
Well, the juggling thing was simply a lack of musical talent. I have always been drawn to music. I've always been completely focused on music. And although now I am a serviceable, upright bebop bass player, I would look at, you look at the hand you're dealt, right?
Right.
And I would say, there's a lot of people that have perfect pitch, as it's called. There's a lot of people who have a natural musical talent. And I don't know if I want to compete with them. But I did know that I could practice like a freak. I've always been good at practicing. And if you can practice and do little else, juggling is for you. Because practicing will get you good. And what I did was the first person I ever met in show business was me. And I'm from a town where there was no show business whatsoever. I never saw a live show, anything, And I just thought if I could be a good enough juggler, that all of a sudden I could work in show business. And what actually ended up happening was I was a good enough juggler to be able to work around New England. And then over the years, and I guess this still continues, I juggled less and talked more. And that was a, it was a really nice thing. You know, Teller is often fond of saying, kind of taking from Allen Ginsberg's quotation that the poet must stand naked on stage. Teller said, whatever we do on stage is just an excuse for people to stare at us. And I think there's some truth to that. You know, we desperately want to get glimpses of other people's hearts and show our own hearts. And whatever you pick in the arts, whatever you pick in artistic expression, is kind of just an excuse to try to say, you know, to send signals from one burning ship to another. So I juggled because that's what I knew how to do. And it was a pretty, I was pretty happy that, you know, we got, everybody tried to twist that. You know, when I got to, we got to Broadway and we would do interviews, they would say, you know, you were just hitchhiking and living on the streets and juggling. That must have been horrible. And it was very hard to answer and say, no, I liked it as much as I like Broadway, actually. And we are at a, it's difficult to use the words you want to use because I didn't live anywhere and yet I wasn't homeless. My mom and dad, I had a wonderful relationship with. I could have lived there any second I wanted. I could have gotten an apartment easily. I had enough money. And I think it's disrespectful to those who find themselves in the impossible situation of not having a house, not having a place to live, for some, you know, punk child who's 19 years old and is healthy, no substance problems, has money, and just chooses to live that way, is a different thing that we don't really have a word for. You know, you could say something right, like vagabond or nomad, but that's a little bit too exotic what I was doing. I was just, you know, standing on street corners, juggling, getting money, going to McDonald's, and then spending the night with somebody.
And also, it just seems to me, and maybe you'll disagree with this, but it also was somewhat emblematic of the time too, right? I mean, it was, sure, it was, you were not the only person doing this in the 1970s.
The word we use is hippie.
Yeah.
And that certainly fit me in every way except the drugs, which is just an odd little quirk of my life, but I've never had a drink of alcohol or any drug. And there I was with hair down in the middle of my back, with a sleeping bag, juggling on the street. And I don't think you could have found one person to believe I wasn't on drugs. And yet I wasn't, you know. I guess the only two people in the world that believed it were my parents, which they would be considered naive, except they were right. That's their only defense.
In the novel, we learn about Poe, who is living this life and is sleeping rough, as you say. And what do you think it's important for us as readers to know about Poe?
Well, I think a lot of the book is about how one can live a moral life outside the law. And I wanted to put the character in an impossible situation. I guess that's a little bit backwards. When I was working the streets of Philadelphia and making a lot of money performing, I was offered by someone, different than the book, but offered by someone to go into crime because you are dealing with people who are on the edges of society. And I always thought about what would have been like to take that path. You know, I have friends who are now wonderful citizens and live in society wonderfully, who had time in the past that they were criminals. And part of it is kind of their story, how you think you're going to be able to put all these constraints to live outside the law and yet still follow certain moral rules. As Bob Dylan said, to live outside the law, you must be honest. And I really wanted to see what a person like me would do if they were forced to live completely outside the law as a criminal and still thrive to keep a morality and a positive self-image, to consider themselves a good person while they were wanted for murder.
Penn Jillette is our guest. The name of the new novel is Felony Juggler, and it is published by Akashic Books. I find it interesting because when you talk about the criminal aspect of this, and even you being offered a life in crime, is it because of the skill of misdirection and being able to outwit and to outmaneuver and to simply be able to outsmart people?
Oh, I don't know. You know, one of my big differences in magic with almost everyone else in magic is I do not enjoy the gotcha aspect. You know, there's Jerry Seinfeld said that all magic was, here's a quarter, now it's gone, you're an idiot, now it's back, you're a fool, show's over. And that was actually what kept me out of magic. The way I see stage magic, as we do it, as Teller and I do it, is exploring epistemology together in a friendly way. That is to say, how do we determine what we know? How do we know what we know? And there is this facile and incorrect way of looking at magic, that magic exploits mistakes in our thinking. And that is 180 degrees wrong. Magic exploits the best parts of our thinking. If every time I moved an object from this hand to this hand, you wondered if it's actually gone across that, you'd waste a lot of time. You'd have no processing power. You couldn't live. We have to make assumptions. And magic explores those assumptions, but not because they're negative, but because they're there. And the most important one of that is how we deal with trust. In everything I write and in the show, trust is an obsession of mine. Not so much that we shouldn't trust people, but how wonderful it is that we do trust people.
And I apologize for interrupting, but how would you like the audience to trust you and Teller as magicians, and ultimately getting to what you were saying of instead of feeling like having the audience feel like a dope, that's not the reaction they have?
Yeah, what I want the audience to feel is, hey, while you were learning to program a machine code, while you were learning to fix cars, while you were learning to do surgery, me and this other guy spent all that time learning to explore how things can be exploited to make us see miracles that aren't there.
Yeah.
So let's all together do that. And believe me, right now I'm not lying to you, and you will leave the show not believing anything that I don't think is true. But in between, let's play around with how distorted that can be. And if that allows you, and this is still a little too cynical for my taste, but it slides in there, if that allows you to treat the world with a little skepticism when it's called for, well, so be it. Another way to put that is, if two gazoonies like us can make you think this is true, what can the people with a real agenda do to you?
What is it like when you are working on new things and working on aspects of the show to work with your fellow Gazzuni? What is that process like?
Well, you know, Teller and I, are, I think, are now, I believe the Smothers Brothers, or Dickie, actually came out and said it. We are now the team that's been working the longest. You can talk about Mick Jagger and Keith Richards, but they take 3 years off every right. now and then to hate each other.
Yeah.
They spend that time. Teller and I, even during the lockdown, we were working together all the time. I believe we've never gone longer than a week without working together in 50 years. And I believe the reason is that we never tried to be friends. Lennon and McCartney fell in love with each other. That's very clear. Jagger and Richards, very much so. The Smothers Brothers were, of course, brothers. But Teller and I both believed that we could do better stuff together than we did separately. And our attitude, which has been proven over and over, and our attitude was much more like two guys going to work at a 7-Eleven than some sort of romantic journey. Now, it's been 50 years, and my children insist I refer to Teller as my BFF, because over that time you develop a deeper friendship that's way beyond affection even. I mean, the first person to see my children when they were born outside of my wife and medical staff was Teller. When our parents died, we were the first people we talked to. We are very, very close, but we don't socialize at all, because for us to go out to dinner would be, hey, Teller, what'd you do today? The same thing you did. Precisely the same thing you did.
Now,
so I think that part of the reason for the longevity and the success that we've had is the fact that we are both very businesslike. If we don't get along, we don't care. We arrive on time. We do our jobs.
You mentioned the sibling connection, of course, with the Smothers Brothers, but I remember in talking to both Tom and Dick separately of that a key part that they had reached a point where they couldn't stand each other and had to go into basically couples counseling of trying to really reestablish some level of trust. But it seems like that has never wavered with the two of you, that trust has remained rather rock solid.
I tend to, because of my puritanical upbringing, I tend to blame so much on substance abuse. It seems like if you're in a partnership and neither one of the members drinks or does drugs ever, and you always arrive on time, you don't have to do that much more. you know, as I said to my son, in all of life, all you really got to do is show up on time and do what you say you're going to do. And he said, well, you don't need show up on time, because that's just doing what you say you're going to do. I said, yes, just do what you say you're going to do. So, you know, if Teller annoys me, which he does sometimes, and I annoy him, which I do all the time. If our emphasis is not on the relationship, but on the project, the goals, the relationship kind of sort of takes care of itself. Now, I realize that's a too easy answer, and there are many cases where that's not true. But in this particular subculture of the Penn & Teller organization, which is actually not two people, but more like 12, that kind of is successful for us.
And the fact that that you're the one that speaks, does that play into it at all?
Well, the joke among everybody is that Teller doesn't talk on stage and I don't talk off stage.
Yeah.
Teller is essentially the director, and Teller is essentially the one who interacts with everybody on the crew. And he is the one, if you were to come into a Penn and Teller rehearsal, you would see Teller on stage with a microphone talking to everybody, and you would see me sitting in the corner reading my Kindle. And I've asked questions, which I answer either talk to Teller or talk to Glenn. To get an answer out of me is almost impossible. Glenn is our manager. He runs everything.
Yeah.
So perhaps there's a psychological balance there where if I were really saying nothing off stage, I might feel left out, except I'm going to talk so much on stage.
But, and that's something that I think is rather common with people who are performers or in the media, that they tend to be more introverted. And if they're going to go out and they're going to speak and they're going to say a lot, well, damn it, you're going to get paid for it.
Well, yeah, that is a really good way to put it. That's not what it feels like, but that is the truth. I mean, I am so much more comfortable talking to 5,000 people.
Yeah.
Than I am talking to one person.
Right. Yeah. And it shows on stage. You were mentioning about the bass. When I saw you in Vegas a number of years ago, before the show, you're in the band. You're playing.
Yeah.
I don't think half the people even knew it was you.
Yeah, we don't we don't announce it, yet we don't conceal it. I sit there playing bass, and I've been doing that for over 25 years, every show. And for me, I don't know. I think it's, I was going to say something more complicated. It's probably simpler. I like it.
Yeah.
But it also is a wonderful way into the show. I don't talk at all. I'm not the band leader. I don't pick the tunes. I'm reading music. The audience is there. I get to look at them, but I'm playing music. I'm not performing, and those are slightly different things. I'm not addressing them directly. Their attention is not supposed to be on what I'm doing. It's kind of perfect. I'm playing bass, which is the comping instrument. I do solo now and again, but they're mostly listening to the piano. And all of that I've grown to enjoy very, very much as a state of mind before the show.
So back to Felony Juggler, but you enjoyed writing this. This is something you enjoy doing.
I love it. I love it. I love that the honesty I usually share with an audience is instantaneous, and it's out there, and it's in a room, and it's big. And when I'm writing, it is so intimate. It's just what I have on my keyboard and what's in my head. And even when you say the word, when you say the name Poe, I'm a little startled. Like, how does he know that? Because it was inside my head. And I love the slow motion quality. And I love how it's me touching a keyboard, and then you look at the book and decode that. And it really is as close to a mind-to-mind connection you can have. And I think I find it so wonderful because I also have the other. I don't have an either or of I could be a stage performer or write books. I get to do both, and I love them both, and they are very different and also the same thing. And that's wonderful.
Ben Jillette is the author of Felony Juggler, a crime novel. It is published by Akashic Books. Ben, what a pleasure. Thank you very much for spending time with us.
What a joy talking to you. Thank you so much.
Again, the name of the book is Felony Juggler, a novel by Penn Jillette. It is published by Akashic Books. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.